This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 13th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. And support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring travel and tourism in the February 18th edition, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can also register for the daily business e-news.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a survey released from the Walton Family Foundation considers residents of Northwest Arkansas's happiness and opinions about education, transportation, and more.
Plus a preview of Theater Squared's latest production, Sons of the Prophet, which opens later this week. Also, we continue our series on Ozarks at Large inspired dishes with a brand new crepe.
First, a proposal to set a cap on how much the state's government can grow each year is headed to the full House of Representatives. The House Committee on Revenue and Taxation passed a bill that would limit growth in most of the state's annual expenditures to either 3% or the three-year average increase in the state's gross domestic product, whichever is less. The director of the state's Department of Finance and Administration told lawmakers yesterday that would unconstitutionally delegate some budgetary decisions to the executive branch and jeopardize critical government services such as prisons and police. House Republican leader Representative Bruce Westerman says the bill is needed to prevent government spending from growing faster than the state's economy, and he thinks it's a good solution.
I don't see that we're ceding it to the administration. I think we're actually exercising more control and authority over the budgeting process, especially with the emergency expenditures. If there truly is an emergency, then they can come back and the legislature can agree or disagree whether we've got an emergency expenditure.
Governor Mike Beebe has said he opposes the legislation.
A House committee is advancing a bill that would let state colleges and universities decide whether to let permitted faculty and staff carry concealed handguns on campus. The House Education Committee passed Representative Charlie Collins' bill yesterday on a voice vote. Both a college student and professor spoke for the bill. One person, a high school student, spoke against it. After the meeting, University of Arkansas Little Rock Chancellor Joel Anderson said he and other chancellors in the state are against the bill.
There's a difference in judgment, and I understand that in the minds of some people, and people that I respect, this would make for a safer campus. And it's my judgment, and it's that of our law enforcement people on campus, as well as other presidents and chancellors, that it does not make a safer campus, that it, in fact, it tends to do the opposite.
Collins, a Republican from Fayetteville, is the representative for District 84. Echoing the same talking points he stood beside since introducing the bill, he says his bill is a preventative solution to a problem.
And the problem I'm talking about is the number of crazies and killers that select our college campuses to murder our loved ones. And this is a recurring problem. It's a frequent problem. It's not going away.
He amended his bill to let university boards of directors decide each year if they want to opt out of allowing concealed weapons on campus. Anderson said that amendment is a positive step for the legislation.
Political pundits are already questioning whether President Obama's proposals on guns will hurt Democratic candidates in Republican-leaning states like Arkansas and swing states. In an interview yesterday on MSNBC, former Democratic U.S. Senator Blanche Lincoln says Democrats have to be realistic in their approach to tackling contentious social issues.
Well, I think you have to realize that, first of all, it's an issue that has to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with comprehensively. It's not just guns. It's obviously all kinds of things, mental illness, which we have not done as much as we should on in this country. There's no doubt. I've got areas in our state of Arkansas, three counties that for years went without mental health. Those are critical issues.
Lincoln says the most important thing is for Democrats to come to the negotiating table with the willingness to find consensus with Republicans and pass items where there is mutual agreement.
Arkansas's Lieutenant Governor Mark Dar says he is not interested in the governor's race. He adds that he fully supports Asa Hutchinson for the Republican nomination for governor. Lieutenant Governor Dar told Talk Business Arkansas he's fully focused on the legislature right now, but is open to running for another office in the future.
I'd be honored to serve a Republican governor. I think I've done well working with a Democrat governor. And so to do that with a Republican would be a bonus. And then also I think that making a difference in D.C. is very attractive.
Curtis Coleman and Asa Hutchinson have both announced interest in the Republican nomination for governor. Former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter is the only currently announced candidate on the Democratic side.
Members of the Bella Vista Property Owners Association will be the deciding factor on whether the POA sells three properties to the city of Bella Vista. The properties in question are the police and fire buildings on Town Center, Trafalgar, and Glasgow Roads. The city currently leases all three properties from the POA, but has offered to purchase all three for just less than $1.9 million, a price that is more than $1 million below the market value assessed during a September 2010 appraisal conducted for the Property Owners Association. Although the POA Board of Directors supports the decision to sell the property, the issue must be put to a vote of the membership. Ballots will be mailed early next month, and they must be returned by 6 p.m. on May 21st. The results of the vote will be announced at the association's annual meeting that same night.
John Brown University has received a sizable gift to help restore a historic residence hall on the Siloam Springs campus. The university announced this morning that it's received a $3 million lead gift for renovation of the historic J. Alvin Brown Residence Hall. Rooms in the 93-year-old men's dormitory will be updated into modern suites, similar to those in the university's newest residence halls. The building is the oldest university structure on campus. Construction on the project will begin this summer and wrap up, at least scheduled to wrap up, in the summer of 2014. Approximately $1.25 million of the whole $3 million lead gift is designated as a matching challenge, a move meant to encourage other gifts to help the university meet the $5.5 million price tag of the project.
Mostly cloudy tonight with lows around 30 degrees. Sunny tomorrow with highs in the mid-50s to lower 60s. And tomorrow night, expect mostly cloudy conditions with a low of 29 in northwest Arkansas and a low of 34 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Do your neighbors seem happier than the people you know in other places? A new survey conducted by the Walton Family Foundation, released a few hours ago, suggests more residents in Northwest Arkansas are happy than in many other parts of the country. The Northwest Arkansas Quality of Life Survey report says 94% of respondents in the region say they're happy with life overall. A figure higher than most people would guess.
Not only higher than most people would guess, it actually is higher than many of these surveys that are conducted in other areas across the country.
Rob Brothers is the director of the Walton Family Foundation's Home Region Focus Area. He talked about the survey yesterday in his office in Bentonville a few hours before the report was made public.
You know, people are happy to live here. And that was certainly important to the foundation as we tried to understand the impact that our grant making is having on the area and having on people's happiness. So we were very gratified to see that, particularly a lot of the projects that we've been involved in, we're enjoying very heavy usage and contributing to that overall happiness with quality of life. Things like the Walton Arts Center and the Jones Center and the trails that we have been instrumental in helping to introduce, along with a lot of other partners here in our two-county area.
The report found that nearly two-thirds of the people questioned, 63%, have used the area's trail system. Between 40 and 43% of respondents have attended events at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, the Walton Art Center, and the Jones Center for Families. The survey, conducted in conjunction with the Survey Research Laboratory at Mississippi State University, will be used as a guide for the foundation to assess its grant-making strategy in the future. Last year, the foundation says it invested more than $30 million in initiatives here and elsewhere in Arkansas and the Mississippi Delta region. Respondents to the Northwest Arkansas survey live in Benton and Washington counties. While an overwhelming percentage of people say they're happy, 1 in 4 responded they didn't have enough money to meet everyday needs.
As always, there are those of us who are fortunate to enjoy those things need to be very aware that that there are others that are still struggling, and that gives us and other community partners an opportunity to not only be aware, but to try to engage in increasing a level of happiness for those folks as well.
The survey breaks down the 25% who say they don't have enough money to meet needs a bit further. Of those 25%, only about 1 in 10 possesses a bachelor's degree, and 6 in 10 have children younger than 18. Other findings from the survey released this morning, 70% say there is too much traffic in the morning. 60% of those asked support mass transit as an addition to the region, though only 50% say they'd use it. More than two-thirds perceive education from kindergarten through college to be of good quality, though only 21% believe pre-K is affordable.
Hey, it's something for us to think about, and it's something for other community partners to think about as we release this information to not only inform the work that we've done, but to help our other community members understand what some of the highs and the lows in the area are. We have done specific grant making here in Bentonville for the Helen Walton Children's Center, but there's more work to be done. Again, a great quality of life, but no matter how good the quality of life, there are still things that can be improved.
The survey also sought information about residents planning to stay or leave the region. Just over three-fourths of respondents told surveyors they plan to remain here. 19% responding say they do plan to move away. Of the 19% who are planning to leave, two-thirds cite salary or jobs as reasons to go, while about one in five of the 19% say family and friends living elsewhere would be the catalyst. Those likely to leave in the next 5 years are younger, average and median age of 41, with a lower income than those planning on staying. Again, Rob Brothers with the Walton Family Foundation.
It's a circular relationship, maybe you might say. Those things that cause people to be very happy with their quality of life here, their jobs, their income, their family, those are the same sorts of things that might attract people to leave here. Not a dissatisfaction with the area, but seeking those same happiness components elsewhere, being career and family.
The survey reached 815 residents in Washington and Benton counties between the ages of 20 and 64. There were 77 questions in all concerning five topics in which the Walton Family Foundation directly invests and other topics not included in the foundation's strategic plan.
We really wanted to understand the impact that those projects that the foundation has been involved in funding, what kind of impact they had on quality of life. So some of the questions were directed to that. And then we wanted to uncover if there were any other potential areas of concern or direction that people have. So that was the nature of the 77 questions that were asked. It was a telephone poll, both landline and cell phones, so that it could be statistically valid and equally balanced with demographics between the two counties.
Rob Brothers is the director of the Walton Family Foundation's home region focus area. He talked about the survey released this morning yesterday in his office in Bentonville. Results of the full survey can be found at the foundation's website, waltonfamilyfoundation.org. And just a few other things, Antoinette, in the survey released this morning that I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
In the report, talked about people who thought they might leave the area and the people who might stay.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned that it was younger people who are more likely to consider leaving. If you're between 20 and 24, 35% of respondents said they were considering leaving. But if you're in the age bracket 45 to 54, only 8% of those respondents said they were thinking about leaving the area.
Interesting.
Talked about how many people have used the trails or amenities like Crystal Bridges. This comes as no surprise, but I wanted to mention it. If you live in Bentonville, 54% of people have been to Crystal Bridges, so it's right there in your hometown.
Right.
Rogers, 50%, Springdale, 41%, Fayetteville, 30%.
Only 30%?
Only 30%.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
People in Fayetteville that have made at least three visits, 8%. Pointing at me right there.
Pointing at you.
And then also, the more than 800 people who were in this survey were asked what they would like to see more of as far as amenities in Northwest Arkansas.
Okay, we have quite a few at this point.
The biggest response was an outdoor amphitheater, 67%.
Right. That's
not surprising
to me. Not surprising, actually.
Recreational facilities, I'm not quite sure what that would mean. Outdoor basketball courts, tennis courts, I don't know.
Right.
But that was 62%. 60% said mass transit. Professional sports teams, 53%. We do have the Nats.
We do. It's semi-pro team.
Right.
Or,
no,
or not semi-pro.
Pro,
it's a
minor league.
Minor league. Thank you.
And all the way down, restaurants, better restaurants, 39%, which means more people are satisfied with the restaurants than are not.
Yeah.
Shopping, better shopping, 36%. And opera received 31%.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess opera in the Ozarks is fairly close.
Sure. And you have Opera Fayetteville that has a production per year.
Mm-hmm.
You have some of the university productions.
Okay.
you do have opera now at the theaters, those HD, but that's
sure,
not live opera.
That's not right, not no. live like what I assume people meant for this. I'm really not surprised about the amphitheater.
I'm not either. That seems to be, as far as music, what most people, because a venue that could have 3,000, 3,500
sure.
outside.
Well,
could,
I also think, too, part of it was probably influenced by the fact that we've had one, and it's just kind of in limbo. I mean, like, I count, like, the Arkansas Music Pavilion. It's outdoors, and it's always been at the Northwest Arkansas Mall, and then they've moved to the fairgrounds.
We'll be there again this year, but that's not a permanent location.
And I think that's probably why it's on people's minds and things like that, you know, and it's something that they know they can have,
right?
I think.
Well, and you see Sandstone, I think that's near Kansas City, and other places that have them, and they can attract some acts that you
wouldn't get otherwise.
Don't imagine seeing in Northwest Arkansas.
Right.
Or the Arkansas River Valley.
Excellent. Well, I hope that's on the agenda soon, because I do like outdoor music venues.
Same here.
So, thank you.
Funny is as funny does. Maybe Zach is the guy who does. Hey, Zach.
Hey.
You're from Thailand. You're
yeah,
Thai
Highland,
individual?
Highland, Wisconsin, yeah.
No, not Highland, Thailand.
Highland, yeah.
Thailand.
Highland.
No, what I'm saying is you're from Highland, but if you were from Thailand.
By what? I don't know.
Join me this week on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
What Do You Know Radio Hour, Saturday morning at 10 on KUAF.
Theater Squared's next production, the Pulitzer Prize-nominated play Sons of the Prophet, is set to premiere in Fayetteville this Friday. Theater Squared is one of two regional theater companies producing this play since it ended its original run. It tells the story of a young Lebanese-American living in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. With a frustrating job, unexplained chronic pain, and a crisis at home, his health, sanity, and insurance premium are on the line. Sons of the Prophet playwright Stephen Karam recently came to the Fayetteville Public Library for a preview forum about the upcoming play. The discussion was moderated by our own Kyle Kellums, who asked Stephen how much of his own life is present in the play.
There's no easy answer to that question, but I suppose the closest I can get to the truth is that everything I write, including this play, which does feature a protagonist who has my shared family background, the family religion, is everything I write is deeply personal. But even in the case of a play like this that has features my hometown, Eastern Pennsylvania, places I'm very familiar with, it's all behind a shield of fiction. That being said, I feel like if I'm doing my job, I can actually be somehow more truthful emotionally about maybe who I am or how I see the world, even if the factual, you know, beat by beat, moment by moment is not true. So I feel like I always have to say it's not based on me, but that being said, I don't write anything that doesn't come from a deeply personal place.
This play was commissioned. How did this come about?
Well, so I wrote a play called Speech and Debate that Fayetteville's very own Jason Moore, who went to Fayetteville High School, directed. Jason's an incredibly talented director. And we launched that play, and it did really well. We had so much fun. And the same theater company, Roundabout, commissioned me for another play. And it was a really special situation in that the Speech and Debate was done in a black box theater that had literally been built beneath one of their main stages. So it was a real graduation. I literally did my next play upstairs. Mm-hmm. The Prophet was in their 450-seat theater. And so it was special in that regard, you know. But it was a commission from, they produced my last two plays.
Stephen, there's a real economy in, 94 pages here. As I was reading this the second time, first time I read for pleasure, the second time I'm trying to prepare for today, I'm imagining a lot of hard work parsing down, struggling over every single word that these characters say, still giving us enough in the audience information, and still making it sound real. This couldn't have been an easy process.
That is a very astute observation. You are completely correct. This play was an interesting lesson for me in that I think it's my most economical play, but it took the longest to write. And it's it's because of what you said. I think I just spent a lot of time considering and doing readings and drafts and figuring out what the audience could piece together themselves. That's always an exciting thing. And sometimes you don't know that. We did this play out of town in Boston first, and that was the first indication of what I could leave out, what audiences seemed game to. It's a play that leaps time, so it's not traditional in that, you know, scene one doesn't end and you know what lights up are gonna be, you know, like that day. Once the play gets going, you realize you don't know. You might skip 2 weeks, you might skip a month. And so it was interesting to learn those lessons by letting an audience tell me what was okay and what was not, and what was needed and what was not. And then, you know, we have this incredible cast of actors here at Theater Squared, but the first people to do it also tell you, if you're lucky to have good actors, they are the first people to also help you understand what you can leave out. And that this was play was also a discovery in that, and you know, in letting an actor through their eyes and body language what they can accomplish without you as the writer hurling words at them that they don't need.
Joseph, of course, is who is sort of the protagonist here, but all the characters and all the relationships are very interesting. I think my favorite relationship, though it's perhaps the one that's least explored, is Gloria, who Joseph works for, and Bill, when they're in this madcap scene in the house, and how she's trying to communicate, he's trying to communicate, and on one sense they're hearing each other, but on the other, they don't understand each other at all. I love that scene.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of seeing the way two people process pain. And I think once I was talking about this at the workshop, you know, I sort of, after the first draft, I take a look and see what it is that I'm actually doing and saying. And that moment came about because once I accepted that a lot of what I was exploring is the way we cope with pain and the way we cope with pain that lingers and that doesn't go away, I felt like that was a combination that was somewhat irresistible. In that Bill is an old world, you know, born in Lebanon, came here as a teenager, young teenager, and someone who very much was raised in a way in that you would not discuss your troubles or your pain or your and Gloria, this other character, is somebody who very much is of, you know, she's had a therapist probably for most of her life. She doesn't know she's the woman that we all know overshares, and you just, you know, she's the woman that you just run into her at the grocery store and it's how you doing, and it somehow always comes back to her, even when it's about you. She asks you how you're doing, and before you know it, you're hearing about, you know, the sprained ankle she has, her daughter hasn't called her. I mean, not those actual things, but so I found that, you know, and again, and when something like that presents itself and is so comical and real at the same time, those are always my favorite moments, because then I feel like I'm not cheating, but you can inject a lot of comedy into a play that has a lot of tragedy in it. So
many people here have read the script, will know the script before they come into the theater. Do you like that, not like that, or does it matter at all?
What a good question. Do I like it, do I not like it? I just think it's kind of great in a lot of ways. I think it's It just changes the way you would come into the play. I don't think it's good or bad. I think it would just be a fascinating experience. Like, I love reading plays before I see them, because then you are not only seeing the story come to life in ways you could never fully hear it while you're reading it, but at the same time, you catch that kind of magic thing about a play where you realize that as detailed as the script is, it is in some sense kind of magically a blueprint, and that as much as this is my production, this is tomorrow's production, and it's these actors' production, and that's what is so amazing about theater. It's like I've made this blueprint, but the house is gonna get built again and again and again, and I love that, and I think for people who aren't accustomed to doing that, it's sort of that experience of going in and probably thinking like, oh, I thought, oh, I thought maybe that would be like this at the end or this. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's good or bad. I think it just kind of clues you into to how magical and in the moment a play really is. You know, seeing the same play on different nights of the week, you have a different experience. So,
well, should we set up which scene we're going to see tomorrow?
Sure. What you're going to see today is the second scene of the play. So for those of you who know the play, that might ring a bell. For those of you who don't, I don't think there's a ton you need to know before you see this scene. In the first scene, we meet Joseph and Gloria, his boss, and we learn a little bit about him. And in this scene, just come over here. In this scene, we meet Gloria and, Joseph, again, and his family. And he's in the doctor's office with the physician's assistant and dealing with some of the medical issues that have been going on in his family. I mean, in his life. Apologize. And I'll just briefly introduce the actors. This is Lara Jo Hightower, who will be playing the physician's assistant. Michael Bradley Cohen playing Joseph. Mason Aisbill playing Charles. And Bill Rogers playing Uncle Bill.
They still haven't published my letter to the editor.
You mailed it yesterday.
Russia looks like a headless dog.
They won't publish a photo of that kid when he kills your father because he's underage, but they will publish one of him when it comes to profiling the top football players in the state. Give me a break.
Sylvania looks like a chicken.
What does he look like? Did you see the photo?
He looks like a punk. Shaved head, mulatto, wears a...
That's kind of an outdated term.
Mulatto was offensive. People call me things all the time. They always think I'm Italian or Jewish. I don't take offense.
Calling someone Italian or Jewish isn't offensive!
Okay, he's half black, or should I say half African-American. What makes you boys happy?
Oh, my God.
He's just some kid doing a prank.
And he's in foster care.
You're making excuses for him?
If we'd been bouncing around foster homes our whole life, who knows where
we'd be. Plus, the stuff I did when I put the gnome in front of Mr. Boudash's driveway.
When did you do that? Where did the gnome come from?
His yard. It wasn't different.
Boudash deserved that. Why would anyone want a plastic bearded man guarding their yard?
He could have been in a bad accident.
No one swerves to avoid a plastic elf creature. The black kid knew a deer decoy.
Stop calling him the black kid.
I'm sorry, the mulatto
man. Oh, stop it!
This whole thing has messed up his life, too. He's really sorry.
How would you know?
We chatted.
When?
Online, he sent us a note saying he didn't expect us to forgive him, but he's sorry.
I don't believe this!
It's not your decision, I already did. He wants to meet us.
Oh, we are not meeting this kid. That kind of healing, okay, only happens in Lifetime movies.
I'll meet him alone then.
Television for women.
I don't need your permission to meet him.
Of course
yes, you do.
Do.
You're not calling the shots just because we never talked about it officially doesn't mean legally I'm your guardian now. So for both you boys, why?
Uncle Bill, you aren't my legal guardian.
Of course I am. Who else?
I'm 29.
Are you that?
Uncle Bill.
Are you that old? My God.
How old are you?
Well, I don't know what you'd think about.
What, old man?
What if I moved into the house for a bit? I'm thinking your dad would want that just for a little while until this one's off to college.
I've got things under control. How's your hip?
It's fine.
Yeah? And shouldn't you be wearing that little oxygen backpack thing?
No, I just wear it at home. I don't like cars.
Yeah, but if the...
It's you boys I'm worried about. You with your hypo-whatever.
We are turning into the disabled family.
Speak for yourself. I walk all over. You just got to be careful now with all the color kids.
Uncle Bill, it is ignorant for you to say something like that. It's embarrassing for you.
I'm saying this to you. I worked at the plant for 29 years. The moment Bethlehem Steel starts recruiting in Puerto Rico in the 70s. Then the Dominicans came in. You think that corporation collapsed just because of
yes,
finance?
Yes, I do.
The plant could have lasted longer. Your father shouldn't have had to switch jobs.
I'm glad he didn't have to work near a blast furnace his whole life. That's progress.
You finished going through his stuff?
No, if I do too much, it gets...
How about the picture of St. Rafkin? Did you leave that up?
Yeah.
No.
Charles!
Find out when he comes over.
She is on her deathbed, Uncle Bill. She has no eyes in the photograph.
Her suffering is what's beautiful about
right, no, he's just saying an eyeless woman isn't fun to look at.
She was your father's favorite saint. He wouldn't want it in some drawer.
I'll hang it up.
Rafka won't let you suffer alone, you hear me? Keep praying to her. All is well.
We stopped going to church.
Charles! Are you kidding me?
25-minute drive.
Oh, well, God forbid you have to spend 25 minutes in a car, Charles. Moana. You want to know real suffering? Take a look at your bloodline. The Maronites of the diaspora, they gave their lives for your faith.
We know, okay.
25-minute drive. Bobo and Momo would turn over in their grave.
You notice how our grandparents sound like clowns.
You okay?
Yeah, just give me a lift, gonna use the restroom.
Go with him?
No. There we go. Thanks.
Does Uncle Bill know? Do you think Dad ever told him we're gay? I can't
no,
tell.
No, he knows.
He never talks about it. He still uses the word
He's a devout Maronite. He took it really well. Besides, did you even have to come out?
I don't dress like a lumberjack, if that's what you mean.
Please.
That's why you don't date more. No one in town knows.
People in town know.
If people in Nazareth think you're gay, it's because they think you're a lesbian. You have to drop hints.
Charles, I know how to...
No, in this town, you must drop hints. You get clued in by guy's voice or shoes.
Charles,
right?
You're worrying about the wrong things, okay? Look, don't you think... Doesn't Uncle Bill seem, like, less steady to you?
He's always used a cane.
No, but look, Dad, before the accident, he mentioned he thought Uncle Bill would be moving in with you guys soon.
Why?
Caught him sleeping on his couch one weekend. It freaked him out.
Well, why would Uncle Bill be sleeping on his couch?
Because he couldn't make it up the stairs.
Seriously?
I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should say something to him, or I don't know if I should wait, or what. Oh, come on, Charles.
This is not good.
We're gonna be fine.
Guys, your uncle took a bad fall in the bathroom. Can you come help?
Stephen Karam is the playwright of Sons of the Prophet, and he recently attended a public forum on the production at the Fayetteville Public Library. We also heard from the director of the play, Tamara Fish. Theater Squared will debut Sons of the Prophet Friday night at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. More information is available at theater2.org.
It is Wednesday, February 13th, 2013. This is Ozarks Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Guess who's with us? Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We make the assumption that you survived last night.
Well, we're here, so what was last night?
Our listeners. Oh,
sure.
Last night was Fat Tuesday.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, clearly he didn't survive. But there are some things to do on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
There's a poet named Lauren Zuniga performing at 7 o'clock at the Aubon Payne Coffee House at the University of Arkansas Union in Fayetteville.
How much is that going to run
free.
Me? Okay.
And Clark Buehling tomorrow night will start a newish gig. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's done one or two before. He's performing on Thursday nights at Tanglewood Branch Beer Company in South Fayetteville with random guests.
Perfect setting for Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Nice little homey sort of feel.
Oh, yeah. Admission to the shows, which will feature traditional Celtic acoustic music, is...
free.
You got it.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We've been talking about food a lot lately on Ozarks at Large.
We have.
And we're going to continue.
We are.
Last Wednesday, Christina Thomas took us through the process of a quiche cup
mm-hmm.
that was inspired by Ozarks at Large in the kitchen of Ella's.
Yes.
Now you have a crepe that was inspired by Ozarks at Large.
I do. I took a trip to just off the Bentonville Square to Crepes Paulette. It is a little food cart, food truck, and they make crepes. Obviously. Mm-hmm. So I contacted Paula Jo Chitty Henry. I talked to her before, and she's the co-owner of the food truck along with her husband, Fred. And I'd asked her if she would be interested, and she was, and she'd actually had a little bit of practice being inspired by something before. She'd participated in a similar project for Artisphere last year. So, last week on a rainy day, I stopped by, and here's what she made for us.
I thought about it for a long time. I thought, for a while I struggled. I wanted to bring in something like a feature element that we don't usually do at the trailer. We are pretty limited because we do a handheld, so we can't do everything that you would normally see in a crepe. And so I was thinking about, you know, roast beef, because it's very meaty, and you guys are, you got a lot of meat in your radio station. I was struggling with it. And so then I realized, why not just make a crepe with a lot of the good ingredients that we love on our menu, but put together in a really unexpected way. Because I thought that's exactly like KUAF. It's, Ozarks at Large, which in and of itself is a big variety show. You know, it's got my friend Roby Brock with Talk Business. It's got all of you guys doing your special reports. It's got information about Walton Arts Center and all that stuff. And then, you know, of course, NPR news shows, morning and afternoon. At night, I listen to the BBC, and they have, right now, they've got a whole section from South Africa or Africa somewhere. And so I was just thinking, as something that brings all those, a lot of different elements together that you wouldn't normally see together and is more than the sum of its parts.
All right, I like it. So let's see, what are we going to make?
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to first clean our griddles off and turn them up to the right heat. And then we start with our buckwheat crepe, which is our signature savory crepe. Some butter on there. This butter never hurts anything. And then we have just a little bit of egg. That's what it's gonna help keep all of the nice juicy things we're gonna add in a little while inside in this handheld format. And then, actually you have a choice and I forgot to ask you first.
Okay.
Would you like turkey or spinach? Are you gonna go vegetarian or?
Let's go turkey.
Turkey, all right then. So then I'm gonna put, change the subject a little bit, I'm gonna put some feta on there. So a nice healthy dose of feta that I'm gonna spread around. And then I'm gonna add some of this nice turkey breast, little chunks of it. And it's gonna sort of melt with that, I mean, warm up with that melting feta on there a little bit. Good chunks. Then we're going to let that cook for a minute. And while I do that, you can do, what I, as I mentioned, you can do the spinach instead of the turkey, which is what I would do because I'm not a turkey eater. So that'll be a different counterpoint to it. So it almost makes two different crepes, but we're gonna call them both the KUAF.
Okay.
So while that's cooking, we're going to get out the pesto over here and the baby tomatoes we can put on up here too. I'm going to add just a few right now and I may pop one on later after I pick it up off the griddle. Then we're going to add the pesto. So this is my idea. The pesto and the feta are two things, and even the turkey are two things you don't normally see together, but we've discovered that they work really, really well together. And when you throw those tomatoes in there, it's just delicious. So I've got lots of good pesto on there. Let's see if this is done now. Oh yeah, I think so. Okay, I'm gonna fold that over. Put it into our nice little handheld format. And then I'm going to pick it up and put it in here, and then as a little bonus, we'll add some, a couple of extra baby tomatoes just on top. Oh, there's Fred.
Hello.
And so there we are. We have the KUAF crepe. It's got turkey, pesto, feta, baby tomatoes, and a little egg. And then you can, and that's all on our 100% organic buckwheat crepes that are gluten-free. And you can also, instead of the turkey, have it with spinach, and should be a real taste sensation.
So people can come and check this out.
Absolutely. It's going to be on the window.
Right. So when you said that some of those things don't normally go together, but you found out that they did go together, was that an accident?
Well, okay, so we rent from a wonderful couple here, and Pam is the wife's name, and she always gets the same crepe, which is the Paulette, which is spinach and feta, which very often go together. And baby tomatoes, which we don't have that on the menu. And so one day somebody said, oh, you should try that with some pesto. And she did, and she just raved about it. She doesn't always do it because it is a distinctive taste.
Sure.
But they are amazingly good together. And so we've been looking for a way to sort of have those two ingredients together, and this just came up as a perfect opportunity.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Are you going to eat it?
I am absolutely going to eat that. It looks delicious.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Saturday night, the Starlight Jazz Series will continue with two performances by the Grace Kelly Quintet in the Walton Arts Center's Star Theater in Fayetteville. Robert Ginsburg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz, recently talked to the young musician over the phone about her upcoming trip to Northwest Arkansas.
You guys are going to be on the road. You're going to be with your band, the Quintet, and you're going to be driving, I understand.
Oh, yes.
I think
my dad calculated it to be about 75 hours of driving.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Grace, just in the way of introduction, at the age of 20, which is, I believe you're 20 now, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
You have already performed in hundreds of concerts around the world, and I don't just mean any concerts, a lot of very prominent venues, including Montreal mm-hmm. Jazz, Newport, Lincoln Center, and Dizzy's Club, and you've gotten really remarkable recognition and kudos from critics and fans alike, and all of this, as I say, just at the age of 20, I realize you've really led a life of music in a lot of ways. You started playing when you were very young, and you were encouraged by your parents, even though they weren't musicians.
Right.
Was it something that you just knew as a child? Is it something that even before you started playing piano, which I think was at the age of 6, is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Was music something that you were just imbued with and attracted to?
Yeah, I mean, there was always a lot of music around my house ever since I was probably in my mom's stomach, just everything ranging from jazz to classical, Broadway. And I've been actually acting since I was 6 years old, and by the time I could talk, I was singing. So I was doing a lot of work on stage, and I knew that music was a huge part of my life. I would sing along with songs, you know, but I never expected it to become a career for me. It's just something I have a natural ability for. I've been going to see jazz shows since I was 6 years old. My parents couldn't find a babysitter, didn't want to or something, so they'd take me along and I'd fall asleep in my dad's arms, and I think the music was subconsciously just soaking in.
And your musicality is really diverse. I mean, the industry tends to want to pigeonhole people, and I guess just to give audiences a handle by which to grasp, are you a pop musician or a jazz musician?
Right.
And particularly on your latest recording, Live at Scholars, you've sort of expressed some of your other musical interests and quite a bit more singing than I've heard you do before.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I've been doing more singing nowadays, and sometimes people are like, oh, I had no idea that you sang, like, and I think I just picked it up, but I've actually been doing that since I was little, and I think that saxophone and voice are very similar in the way that they're both frontline instruments and they're playing the melody. And at the same time, I think saxophone is one of the most voice-like instruments there is. People say saxophone and violin, but I think saxophone.
You are my morning and my nighttime star. You are the voice inside my head when I can't figure out what's going on. You help me get by simply being you. You are my sunshine and my guiding light. You are the voice that brings me closer to my dreams. You're always there to guide. You help me get by simply being you.
So I think I'm vocally and instrumentally, they both help each other. And then there's words and non-words. And I have a huge range of the music and genres that I listen to. And I soak it in, it comes into my ears, and then it comes out in the way that it does through my music. And it's just like a sponge. And it's just eclectic in the way that it comes out. There's no editing in that way. I was talking to my mentor, Phil Woods, and we've done a fair amount of touring together, and it was really amazing for him, who's a legend of bebop and jazz, and he was talking about how jazz is such a flexible genre, and you put it together with other genres and create something great, and he said, yeah, it's fantastic to mix with other things, and I think it works really well, and that's the future of it. And I was like, wow, that's so hip for someone of Phil's, you know, stature to be saying that and to be thinking so forward. And I think that one of the special things about jazz and its genre is improvisation, and that's why I was attracted to it in the first place, because I didn't want to play classical piano, and I hated practicing what was written on the page, but I loved to make up my own songs. So every time I'm playing now, you know, it's spontaneous, it's improvised, some aspect of it is, at least, and that's what makes it so special. And melding that with other genres of music, I think will just create magical stuff.
This is a song of mine entitled Searching for Peace.
Beautiful things is watching somebody's concert and having that feeling of searching. I remember once I was watching Danilo Perez's show, and at the end of the show, I just went up to him after. I got the feeling you guys were searching the whole night, and he's like, yes. And it was magical, and that's, you know, I try to get a few of those magical moments in our performances, and instead of basing my performance on did I play all the licks that I wanted to play or all the lines? More of, did we create a magical moment, you know, once, twice? And that makes it all worth it.
Oh, I so agree. And I think that an audience is appreciative when they get that sense that the artists are reaching. They're not just phoning it in, or they're not just playing what's familiar, but they're really reaching.
That's the amazing thing. I mean, I feel like that's the line where artists can become, like, for me, there's certain times where I'm playing that I don't even know where I am. Like, when I open my eyes, it's a little surprising that I'm, like, there's people watching me and I'm on stage. I guess that's where they call, like, the zone. But there's some moments where we go kind of haywire and band's taking a left turn, and I love it when, like, my band plays something completely different, because then it makes me, you know, feel even more on my toes. And
I'm starting to get excited about this concert, Grace, hearing you talk about it.
Yeah, I live for the dynamic, I guess. For me, like, music is about drama, and it's much more interesting to me to have a band play dynamically rather than just have a horn player play 30 choruses. That's not interesting to me. I don't want to know, like, all of the licks they know, but if it's a journey, it's very exciting. Yeah, I'm so glad that people still come out to live performances and can, you know, really appreciate and feel that magic, because I don't think there's anything that can replace it. You know, it's not the same when I watch something on YouTube or if I hear it on a CD, but it's just a different energy to being in a live performance.
Why don't we just discuss some of the members of your band, because their resumes are pretty extraordinary as well. You have Jason Palmer on trumpet, Evan Graber on bass, Pete McCann on guitar, and Ross Peterson on drums.
Yeah, Ross is great, and we've had a lot of fun times that we have played together. He plays with, like, Patty Austin and a bunch of other people. I had piano in the group for 8 years, and then a year ago I switched to this wonderful guitarist, Pete McCann, just because I was hearing more guitar-like things in my head and writing music for more guitar, and I've been immensely enjoying the freedom that, you know, changing colors and just the texture of the guitar has been bringing the music. And I love piano as well and still record and use a lot of piano, but for my group dynamic now, it's been great to have guitar. It really opens things up. My trumpeter, Jason Palmer, has been in the band for like 6 years now, and he's also based in Boston. I could not find a better trumpet player. We sometimes read each other's musical brains and have these moments where we're soloing together. And there's been a few times where we literally play the same thing and people think it's written out, and we say, no, we've just been playing together for a while and we both keep our ears wide open. And he's quite the composer too.
Well, you want to run with somebody who's going to push you, right?
Absolutely. That's the thing, actually. I've always had this theory that I need to be the worst player in my band. And that's because, I mean, ever since I started, I was working with these amazing musicians, John Lockwood, who's played with Stan Getz and Dizzy Gillespie, Terry Lynn Carrington, and I would find my level would, like, immediately get better just because I was getting pushed. So it's the same with a touring band, and it's so exciting that way because I feel like I'm discovering new things about my playing.
I have to warn you, Grace, that just because you're coming to Arkansas, I don't want you to think that you're going to have an easy go here. You know, this is the home, this was the home of Pharoah Sanders and John Stubblefield and Louis Jordan. And we've got.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bob Doro.
Okay. We'll bring our A game to Arkansas.
Bring the A game. You're going to be doing two shows, a 7 o'clock and a 9 o'clock show.
Uh-huh.
But we're really, really looking forward to hearing you. And I checked in today. There are still some seats left, but they're going fast. I'm looking for a sellout.
Oh, good. Oh, we can't wait. I can't wait.
And I do want to thank you again for taking this time, Grace. I so appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for your wonderful questions.
Grace Kelly recently spoke on the phone with Robert Ginsberg, the host of Shades of Jazz, which can be heard every Friday and Saturday night at 10 here on KUAF. The Grace Kelly Quintet will perform at 7 and 9 Saturday night at Walton Arts Center Star Theater. More information is available at waltonartscenter.org.
President Obama issues the State of the Union address, then Marco Rubio responds for the GOP and Rand Paul for the Tea Party. Plus sequestration, a squabble over Hagel in the Senate, Jesse Jackson Jr. makes a plea deal, and two presidential speechwriters join us to review the State of the Union message. I'm Neil Conan. Political junkie Ken Rudin joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon, beginning at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering news and stories researched, written, and edited by local journalists. More information is available online at nwaonline.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, Asher.
Asher.
In Madison County, it's southwest of Japton, northeast of Thompson, equally distant from Highway 16 and 23. You get to it on County Road 5205.
Very precise of you.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Something I wanted to ask you or talk to you about.
Yes.
Did you see they're cutting wrestling from the Olympics?
Yes. The next Olympics in Rio will have them, and after that, it is not a sport in the Olympics anymore.
Which is weird.
Because it's one of the originals.
Right.
Back in the BC, right?
Right, yes.
Yes. Quite controversial. Some speculate that it wasn't sexy enough. It didn't drive television ratings.
See?
And some think that maybe because the U.S. gets a lot of the medals, that was one reason they might cut it. It's kind of randomly agreed that there might be too many sports at the Summer Olympics, but
wrestling just seems strange, just because of its heritage, if you will,
yes.
That it's been a part of it for forever. I can see something new and random being dropped, but...
Right, right. Wrestling can reapply to be a sport in 2020. Baseball and softball that were dropped a few Olympics ago. Yeah, are going to try. Roller sports, karate, squash, sport climbing, wakeboarding, and wushu, which is a martial art, also want to be included as of 2020.
Interesting. I'm kind of upset about it, but...
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition. And thanks for listening, and happy Wednesday.